Welcome to the Passion, Purpose, and Possibilities podcast. I'm your host, Candace Snyder. And after overcoming a life-changing injury, I discovered the power of passion and purpose in my own life. Now I'm here to share the incredible stories of my guests, people who found their own path to purpose, face challenges head-on, and are making a meaningful impact in the world. Each week, we'll dive into their journeys, their passions, and the causes they care about most, with the hope that their stories inspire you to reclaim your own purpose and explore the endless possibilities that lie ahead. So let's get started and uncover the power of passion, purpose, and possibilities. Did you know that visiting an art gallery can lower anxiety and depression while boosting critical thinking skills? Science even shows that viewing beautiful artwork can spark the same physical reactions as falling in love. That's where Movin' Art Relaxation comes in, a unique, fun, and easy way to meditate with art. Now on YouTube, Movin' Art Relaxation is an innovative platform that connects the beauty of art and music with the power of meditation and the ease of technology. Spearheaded by artist and business builder Peggy Massey, along with therapist Kim Leatherdale, Movin' Art Relaxation is all about getting original artists seen while helping you feel happier, more relaxed, and more productive. Fall in love with new artists and experience the joy and calm that art can bring. Check it out on YouTube today at Movin' Art Relaxation. You can find the link in the show notes. Okay, well, we are back for another episode of Passion, Purpose, and Possibilities. And I'm really excited to introduce the women that are on my show today, because this is a cause that's really near and dear to my heart. And I've talked about this on my social media, and I've presented programs that they're involved in. But I'm going to give you like more of a deep dive into Attitudes in Reverse. And so let me share a little bit about the founder. Soon after her son, Kenny, died by suicide, following a long battle against severe depression and anxiety, Trisha Baker, along with her family, established Attitudes in Reverse, also known as AIR. Mental illness is like air. Just because you don't see it doesn't mean it isn't there. It's all around us. AIR is dedicated to creating a community of understanding, kindness, and empathy through mental health and suicide prevention education. Welcome to the podcast, Trisha Baker. And I also like to mention that Shauna Moses is here. That's my sister. And also Lucy Halter, who is also involved with the organization. So Trisha, I'm going to start with you. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you for having me today.
That, as I mentioned, that what you do is really close to my heart. And I would love for you to share this experience that you've had that led you to believe that AIR can make a difference and that people need to be educated and we need to stop the stigma around mental health and suicide. So can you give us a little bit about the backstory?
Sure. And I do believe in, I don't know, destiny, karma, whatever you want to call it, but I do believe that AIR was meant to be. My son, Kenny, struggled for over 3.5 years with a significant mental health issue. He also had suicidal ideation, and we tried really hard to find him help. He fought. He tried to get help himself. We weren't able to find the resources to help him. And unfortunately, while he was alive and struggling with these illnesses, he met with a lot of discrimination. People, staff members at school who did not understand about these biological brain illnesses. And then after he died, unfortunately, the discrimination continued. Things like they wanted to sticker off Kenny's picture in the yearbook. You couldn't say Kenny's name in the building after he died. My daughter, Caitlin, who's in the same school, received zero counseling support. When I reached out for help, the answer was, "What seems to be the problem, Mrs. Baker?" They wanted to pretend as if Kenny never lived. And I knew we could not let that happen. Kenny was an amazing young man. He had the kindest heart. He was a good friend. He was an amazing son. I always say he was a gift to me for 19 years. So we knew we needed to bring about change, and not just for Kenny, but also for all of those young people who were struggling in silence. Kenny dealt with these illnesses, and he was embarrassed by his illness. He told everybody he had mono for over 3.5 years. And I have to be honest, as a parent, I was ashamed, and I went along with that lie. And I didn't want to say out loud, because no mom or dad wants to say out loud, my child has a mental health issue. So people started to figure out you can't have mono for 3 years, and it just opened up the door to more discrimination and judgment. And unfortunately, it was only 3 weeks before graduating high school that he lost hope, and he ended his life by suicide. But as I said, we immediately, it was only a week after he died that we met, a small group of us met, and we created, it's called Everybody Loves Kenny Project, Inc., because everybody loved Kenny. And but we soon knew, as I said earlier, that it was bigger than Kenny. So we then changed the name to Attitudes in Reverse, or AIR, because we wanted to reverse how people felt about these biological brain illnesses, getting people to understand that there should not be any stigma associated with it. It's no different than having heart disease or cancer, diabetes, some other illness that 70 to 90% of the time are treatable. So that's the main message we want to get out to young people. And I'm very fortunate, as I said, I feel it's a blessing. I've been able to talk to over 250,000 students in the past 16 years. And again, I'm very grateful for that opportunity. I know we've saved thousands of young lives.
That's amazing. I think what a lot of times what we want to do is we want to take the trauma and tragedy and turn it into something positive. I know I felt that way after my brother passed from suicide as well. Like, I was like, what can I do with this? How can I make a difference? How can I help people? And so what you're doing and what AIR is doing is amazing. And we're gonna talk about all the things that AIR is doing to help our youth and even young adults and teachers and families. And we'll get into that in a minute. But Lucy, I'd like to invite you into the conversation. I'd like you to share a little bit about you and how you ended up getting involved with AIR.
So my name is Lucy Halter. I'm a volunteer with AIR. I'm a dog handler, and I bring my therapy dog Lily to events to help support the children. I had no idea about AIR until my dog was 2 years old. I had always intended that she would be a therapy dog because I had found out about pet therapy, and I thought, oh, this would be a great thing for her. And so, but she's a standard poodle, and she was very rambunctious. So until she turned two, she really wasn't therapy dog material, I think is the best way to describe that. But I saw this epiphanal moment where I thought she might be able to do it. So I found a dog training class near me. It was in Lawrenceville. I live in Lawrenceville. And I showed up, and there was Trisha, the dog trainer. And she passed out a whole bunch of information about a pet therapy and also about AIR. And it took me about 30 seconds to realize that that's why I was there, that the mission of AIR just resonated with me immediately. And I then was more determined than ever to get my dog certified as a therapy dog so that I could help. And Trisha was instrumental in that as well. Poodles are not the most cooperative, so no small feat to get it. They're smart, but they're smart enough to say, oh, I don't really want to do this, so I'm going to figure out some way around it. But we did get her certified, and I've been working with AIR ever since. So she's 10 now. So for the last 8 years, Lily and I have been wherever AIR needs us, we go. And Trisha's always, she's very grateful and thankful. But what I say to her is I get way more out of it than I have to give in, because it's just so rewarding to see the impact that the dogs and AIR have on these children. So that's it.
Thank you for sharing that. Dogs are amazing, as we know, and they can be stubborn. I think that's what you're stubborn, but poodles are smart.
I like to call it independent-minded.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that too.
She's definitely got that one. Yeah, independent-minded.
And also, I was thinking, like, there are no coincidences. You were supposed to, you and Tricia were supposed to meet.
Yeah, I believe in that 100%.
Mm-hmm. Shauna, can you share with us a little bit about you and how you became involved with AIR?
Sure. So in 2012, I had a mental health crisis. This is about almost 9 years after we lost our brother to suicide. And when I went through it myself, I think I got over the anger of Mike taking his life because I understood it firsthand. And I wouldn't wish it on anybody. And it just propelled me to do more. I started working at a mental health trade association 3 years prior to that because I was always into writing. And when I saw the job opportunity, it clicked in my head. This is how I can support the mental health field that Mike, our brother, was involved with to an extent I don't totally understand. I wasn't aware of everything he went through. But anyway, it was such a synchronicity, I guess, because later in 2012, I was following one of the therapists had way back then, saying that I needed something outside of my work that would aid me a social life, but all was also meaningful. Of course, I had no idea what that was going to be. The social life, yeah, definitely lacking. And I'm sure that was one of the major factors that led to my suicidal crisis. But then, so later that year, I'm at a conference that the trade association, where I still work there, we held a conference, and one of the people there was a member of the AIR board of directors at the time. She had a flyer with Nikki, which is one of Trisha's Pomeranians. So I will steal her thunder. She can talk more about Mickey later. And I'm a dog fan too. Had dogs growing up and still have them in my life. And so, of course, I'm like, I will definitely promote your event, which the flyer was about, and tell me more about this organization. So the little that I learned in that brief conversation really inspired me. I said, I want to meet the Bakers, and I would love to feature them in our trade association's newsletter, trying to make them even more visible. At the time, I didn't know how visible they were, and now I know they were, well, you can never have too much visibility, I think, especially with such an amazing and essential cause that AIR has. So by December, we finally got our schedules coordinated. It took like a few weeks. And I was even more impressed than I expected to be by the Bakers and the AIR dogs and other volunteers. And one of them was, I think, in middle school at the time with one of the first AIR dogs. And he had autism. And when I met him, he was conversational and seemed confident. And I learned that was a new thing. And it was inspired by his AIR dog, plus I'm sure Trisha and the child's parents and everyone else in his life. So anyway, I definitely wanted to do more with AIR and for the larger cause. So I said, what can I do? And they said, well, you say you're a writer, you're going to write this article. And then I did that and they were happy with it. And they said, can you join our board? I'm like, yeah, sure. So I've been on that, on the AIR board for 12 and a half years now, I think, if I did the math right. And I've done a lot of writing for AIR newsletters and press releases and things like that. And I do a lot of the same kinds of things for the trade association. We've also collaborated on suicide prevention conferences. I think we did 10 of those. And so I'm never short-winded, if that is a word, about this, but it's helped me with my own depression to be involved in two organizations that are making an impact. We are both determined to eliminate stigma, increase access to services for youth and people of all ages. As I also, when I had the opportunity, share my personal story, because I think that's one of the most impactful ways, if not the most impactful way, to eliminate stigma, whether it's our direct experiences, like with me having a suicidal crisis, having depression, or indirectly, like Trisha and Candace and I and many others, unfortunately, from losing loved ones to suicide.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, thank you. Tricia, I would like to talk about, like, what was the first thing that you did to bring a program two kids. I know you went into schools, but like, what was the first program that you offered through AIR?
The very first thing we did was a t-shirt.
Okay.
And it was a t-shirt contest because our motto is start the conversation. So we wanted kids to be able to wear a shirt. We'll first talk about the design concept and then participate in this contest. And then we picked two winners front and back. And those t-shirts have been pretty amazing. So there was one time somebody texted me and said, I'm in a bar in Florida and somebody's wearing an AIR shirt. Yeah. And then somebody else sent me a picture of someone on a camel in Saudi Arabia wearing an AIR shirt. So that tells me the message of AIR is spreading. The whole goal of the shirt was people say, hey, I like your shirt. What does AIR mean? And that opened up the door to the conversation about good mental health and good brain health. And again, knocking down the door to stigma.
Oh, I love that. And you still do the contest, right?
We still do the t-shirt contest. Yes, it's, I forget how many years. I can't count anymore.
I know. It kind of amazes me when I think back to for how long, like, I've known you, how long my sister's been involved. And it feels like a long time, but then at the same time, it doesn't, right?
Right. Agree. Now, well, the other nice thing about the t-shirt contest is a lot of times the kids who enter are the kids who typically don't win a lot of awards. And so that we're able to recognize those students and they feel really good about themselves because they won something and their design goes on either the front or the back of a t-shirt that gets printed on hundreds of shirts. And as I said, can go across the country, maybe even across the world.
Right. And gives them more confidence too, right?
Exactly. Self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
But I too can do something like this.
Now, one of the programs that you do like an assembly type program in the schools, mm-hmm. and that runs the gamut for an age range. So can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. We have multiple programs. So the first program that we created for going into schools, it's called Coming Up for AIR. And we originally started in high schools, but I have to be honest, based on our research, ninth grade is appropriate. After ninth grade, kids are less responsive. And I'm hoping that it's because they have their own counselor, they've identified what their struggles are and they're getting treatment, or sadly, maybe stigma is impacting them. I don't know. But we do Coming Up for AIR now for 7th through 9th graders. And it's an honest conversation about mental health issues, statistics, how 1 in 5 young people struggle. Only 1/3 of those will actually receive treatment for these biological brain illnesses. And again, we want to get out the message, 70-90% of these illnesses are treatable. It's just we don't recognize signs and symptoms early enough. The average time period in this country between first diagnosis and first time seeing a doctor for that illness is 10 to 11 years, right? I always tell people, think about if you've lived with cancer, again, diabetes, heart disease, any life-threatening, debilitating illness for 10 years, and you never saw a doctor for that illness. Think about how the illness can progress and think about some people don't make it through those years. So our goal with the Coming Up for AIR program is to help identify at-risk students and get them the support that they deserve immediately. According to the TCNJ TAPLAB research, we continue to be the only program in the country that does help seeking during the program. Other programs offer help seeking afterwards, but we identify those kids right in the middle of the program and we're able to get them the support. They get to meet with a counselor right after our program. And we have had students go immediately to the ER right after our program because they don't know, first of all, what's going on within themselves, within their brains, within their bodies, and then they don't know that they can ask for help. So that's the main message of Coming Up for AIR, is that there are people who care and that you can get the help that you deserve. So then what we discovered was there's still a lot of hesitation of saying the word suicide to youth. There's still people concerned with contagion. I have to be honest, I respect the theory, but I believe education is key, that if you talk to someone with a healthy brain, you're not going to put these ideas of self-harm in their heads. But if we're talking to anyone who is struggling, we give them permission to ask for help. But we respected schools and we respected philosophies, and we created, it's called the Mental Health is in the Air Toolkit. And we have two versions. We can go from second grade all the way up to, we could do this in seventh grade as well. And we talk about the brain as an organ, right? When you think about it, it simplifies everything, right? Hearts get sick. Sometimes people die from heart illness, right? People die from, brains can get sick, and people can die from brain illnesses. But then there are different active steps, 12 active steps that we talk about in our toolkit that young people can take in order to have a healthier brain. And those include sleep. I talk a lot to kids about sleep because I don't believe our children, especially in central New Jersey, they're not sleeping enough. I ask them the question, who sleeps 8 or more hours every night? That's what the CDC says they should be sleeping. And I get a couple hands raised. And the sad part is the kids around them will laugh at them. And then when I ask who gets 5 or less hours of sleep a night, they raise their hand like it's a prize. Like, I don't need sleep, right? And then I try to tell them that their brains grow and develop until they're 25 years old, and their brains grow and develop while they are sleeping. If they're not sleeping enough, they're actually cheating their brains out of potential growth and development. So sleep is so key. When I have the ability to talk to parents, that's what I want the parents to get to understand, to know that what you may think your child's sleeping, but they may not be. In fact, Kenny, his senior year, before his, actually is his freshman year, before his mental health issue was triggered, he was not sleeping. He was so busy building his college resume, right? Because that's what we do here in this area, right? We think about college, right? We think about activities, sports, all sorts of things that we put on that college resume. And if you have to sacrifice something, well, it's sleep. Right. I talked to one girl in one local school. She was in 5 honor classes. And when I said, why? She said, because my friends are. And I said, is that a good enough reason to sacrifice your sleep and to sacrifice your brain health? So sleep is one of those things we talk about. I talk about healthy diet, right? Exercise, because brain is just an organ. We take care of all of this. We take care of this. Then, of course, I talk about pets, the healing power of pets. When you look at a dog, it releases oxytocin, the relationship hormone. When you pet a dog, it releases serotonin, dopamine, lowers your blood pressure, lowers your cortisol level. So there's all these physiological responses that happen when you interact with a dog. And I sometimes think I'm going to get in trouble with some parents because I tell the kids, every child in my heart, I believe every child should have a dog or some pet. It helps them, not only does it provide them with company and support, but it also teaches them responsibility. So if you have a pet, you want a pet? All right, you have to take your pet out for a walk. You have to feed your pet. There's things that you have to do in order to be involved. But research does show that children who grow up reading to dogs grow up to be more confident readers. And we've launched a school-based program, and the benefits are just unbelievable to having dogs in classrooms with kids. Mm-hmm. So, and I'll get there though. So we do have Mental Health is in the Air Toolkit. And as I said, that can be, I have 2 different levels for elementary school where they get their own toolkit that they can bring to the classroom and use as a tool, or they can bring home and talk with their parents about all these different things that they can actively do to have a healthier brain. And then for the older kids, and again, I talk to the school in great depth ahead of time. Do you want me to say the word suicide? Right? I don't have to. But I will talk about, as I said, brain illnesses. And I talk about what it might feel like to have a brain illness. Right? What are some of the symptoms so they might recognize them within themselves. And then every one of our programs, there's that thread running through it of the safe, trusted adult, that there are people who care, who will understand. And then We don't expect teachers to resolve anybody's situation, but we just ask them to listen and then connect them to the right resources. Mm-hmm. So then right when COVID was starting, dogs are part of everything I do. And I've been watching all the wonderful, amazing things that happen with dogs through all the AIR programs. And I'm also a certified dog trainer. So I study dog behavior, and then I've been studying human behavior. And then when you start to look, there's an amazing overlap of behavior. And that, so then I got this idea of writing a short story based on my five dogs about emotions and behavior. And it's geared for the kindergarten through fourth grade level. And kids absolutely love it. I've shared it with thousands and thousands of students. And the neatest thing is that the kids get to meet one of the dogs from the book after the program. And they love it. I was in the West New York School District for about 2 years. And the words of Goober flew through the district. Everybody couldn't wait. Is that Goober? My cousin met Goober. And the kids get a little trading card that has all of Goober's information. And Goober's in the story. So they get to meet a celebrity in the book. And then they think, wow, you wrote that story? I'm like, yeah, I wrote that story. And though they think that's really cool. So trying to, again, reach kids, the idea on this program is help them identify what they're feeling through their emotions, right? Put a label to it, name it, and then let them know that there's a safe, trusted adult who cares, who will listen. And again, help connect to resources if necessary. The other thing we do is we do for the older students, we do it in some high schools, we do it in colleges. It's called In Their Shoes. And it's a traveling exhibit. It has approximately, I think we're up to about 400 pairs of shoes now. It represents New Jersey youth who lost hope and ended their lives to suicide. And the purpose of the exhibit is twofold. It's first to let young people know that if they're struggling with these thoughts and these concerns, that they're not alone. And then how do we reach that portion of the population who has no idea how hard it is to wake up with a mental health disorder? Again, it's to help increase understanding, empathy, and kindness. We have three parts to the shoe exhibit. It's developed over the years. We have the main part, which, as I said, it's just generic shoes that have been donated with these thoughts that people struggle with. We also have, we call it the VIP, because some people said, well, you're just too sad. Everything I do is just too sad. And yes, it's sad, but how do we bring about change if we don't address the sadness and then talk about hope? And there's always hope. So the VIP shoes are different celebrities' shoes that have been donated. So we have like Mark Wahlberg shoes. We have Senator Patrick Kennedy shoes. We have several of the stars from Supernatural, Jensen Ackles. We have his shoes. And what they've done is they've provided us their personal inspirational quotes of hope so that anyone seeing the exhibit can find that bit of hope. And then the other part of the exhibit, which is sad, but I feel it's necessary, there are legacy shoes. So they're the shoes of those people who've actually lost their lives to some sort of mental health disorder. And what happens with these shoes, it's amazing. Young people will see these shoes and they don't want to be a pair of shoes. They don't want their friends to be a pair of shoes. So we always have, whenever we go to colleges, we have the counseling tables right next to those shoes. And the amount of young people who go from those shoes to the counseling office is amazing. It's amazing because, again, they don't want to be a pair of shoes. They don't want their friends to be a pair of shoes. And then the very last program that we've developed, also it came out of heartbreak. We were at the Hopewell Valley School District. There was a student death by suicide. And the superintendent there knew about us and our dogs, and he invited us in. And what he said was he observed magic that day. He said every student was in the media center. They had every counselor from the district. They had every counselor from the county. Not one child was talking. But then he said the dogs walked in and magic happened. The grieving process started. The kids sat on the floor with the dogs, and then the counselor sat on the floor with the kids. And it just, the grieving started and the healing started. So a week after that, he said to me, I want a dog in every school building every day. How do we do that? So we launched the Air Dogs Paws for Minds program, where we actually go into schools and we work with school staff and we train them with their personal dogs with the goal in mind of one dog on every school property every day. We have about 75 dogs in different districts across New Jersey, and we have about 30 in the Philadelphia area. So that's continues to be my hope and my dream, one dog on every school property in New Jersey, if we can, every day. So amazing. I think that's it. That's why I'm so tired all the time.
All right, I have a couple comments and a couple questions. Okay. So one is, I have experienced the in their shoes display, and every time it is like, it's kind of gut wrenching, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very, very emotional. But as you're going through it, and you're kind of reading the sadness, and then you're reading, but the inspirational and the hope, it does lift you up and it gives you hope. But the visual of it, I mean, unless you really experience it, like, I can't even describe really the emotions that I felt looking at it. The other thing I want to ask you, what is the name of your book? So our listeners.
Ah.
Yes.
Well, I'm very proud of this book because I never thought I'd ever be an author. That wasn't on my list, but it's called, I have it right here. It's called Mickey and Friends Go to School, Exploring Emotions Through the Eyes of Dogs. And I think what makes it so special to me is that it's about every one of my dogs. So this is my little friend Goober. And it's kind of based on real life, because Goober suffered from people dropping leashes and dog training classes, and then those dogs jumping on him. It happened 4 times. And what I believe, and I've seen research in the dog world, and I believe it can stem from humans as well, is that 90% of aggression is fear-based. So the first 2 times Goober was jumped, it was not a big deal. The 3rd time he was jumped, he's like, I'm a little bit cautious of you because I don't know who you are. The 4th time now, he does not trust any dogs he doesn't know. So he becomes this dog, this angry, angry dog. So we talk about how kids can respond to these emotions of anger. We talk about fight, flight, freeze. And I ask them, I go, because in this picture, Goober's choosing to fight. I go, who thinks it's a good solution for Goober to choose to fight? And you do get those kids who are like, yeah, fight, fight. And then we talk about what else can Goober do? And it's always, let's find that teacher. Let's find that safe, trusted adult who will listen. So as I said, I'm very proud of it. It's something I never thought I would ever do. But as I said, I started out with the book just reading to students, one version to students, and it was just so well received by students that I said, well, let me publish it. And it has been received as well.
You should be proud of it. Yeah, it's making an impact for sure. Lucy, I want to ask you a question. Since you've been bringing your dog to some of these programs, can you maybe share with us an experience you've had with a child where I know you had mentioned about the one child that you heard about that had autism and was nonverbal but became verbal and communicative, but what's another experience that you've encountered?
So we actually went to a high school for crisis support. They had lost a child, a fellow student, I guess. And to give the school a lot of credit, the child passed away on a Wednesday, and we were there like Thursday morning with like a team of dogs. So Lily and I were in the library, and that's where all the students were gathered, and all the counselors were nearby. And she was sort of on the floor with a group of girls around her, and they were And everybody was doing pretty well, except for this one boy who was just sobbing. And he was not part of the group that was sitting on the floor. He was over on the side, and he had buddies on either side of him and a counselor at the end. So there's a row of chairs and this young man who's sobbing, and his buddies were around him. And so I'm sitting there sort of thinking to myself, what should I do? What should I do right now? And I finally decided that he's okay. Oh, he's surrounded by, he's got the support of his friends and the counselor's right there. So I don't need to do anything. It was at that moment that Lily, who was quite comfortable on the floor with these young girls, got up and walked across the room to this boy who was crying. And the boy saw it and reached down and petted her, and he smiled in the midst of his tears. And it hit me right then and there that this was so important, that we were there right this second to support him and them in this crisis. So that's just one of the passionate things that I can share about, and it happens a lot. I mean, not fortunately, we don't have to do crisis support as often, but in a school where Trish is coming to present one of the programs, we walk in with the dogs, and then the smiles on the kids' faces immediate. It's immediate, and they get it. They're like, okay, this is it. Let's listen. This is what they have to say, because they took the time to bring these dogs in here, and we feel better already. Let's see what else they have to say.
Shauna, a question for you. So you have presented at some of these programs where you've shared your story, and what's the kind of response that you get from the students?
I wish I can do it more often. It's been a while because my schedule doesn't allow for it, but I'll never forget. The students come up and thank me. They also thank Trisha, and they thank the dogs, because Trisha and I and whoever else is there, we share our stories, and we have the dogs there for additional support in different ways. So by sharing our stories, we're dismantling that stigma. We're saying directly with the actual words, and also by sharing our stories, that having depression or anxiety or any other kind of mental health disorder is nothing to be embarrassed or ashamed about. And it's strength to speak up about it and to seek help. So self-care is so critical, but a lot of us, especially as we become moms or for teachers or coach or counselors, we tend to think of, well, I have to be strong and put up this strong front for the people I'm taking care of. And to some degree, that certainly helps, but I think it's also equally effective to show we're vulnerable. We've been through these experiences I'm not a clinician, but in a clinician's example or peer provider who are people who've had mental health disorders or in some cases substance use disorders, and they're helping people with those same struggles. They're helping people because they've been there and they totally understand what the ones who are currently in treatment are going through. If we don't share our stories, we don't get that. We don't have the opportunity to open that door or break down that wall. And presenting with AIR gave me that opportunity and built my confidence in doing it in other ways, like through op-eds and just other writing opportunities I've had. And I'm just honored to be able to help people, even if it's in that indirect way. Even if I don't ever meet someone, I'm helping directly. Although with those students, I did. It's very empowering for the person sharing the story and for those who are hearing that story.
But I want to do more of that. I just want to help people. And like I said, I wouldn't wish a suicidal crisis on anybody. But just I have been through it, both directly from losing Michael and going through it myself. I want to use that by working through AIR and by job and any other opportunities that might come up to help prevent that tragedy for somebody else. And also along those lines, when I had my suicidal crisis, so my son was, what was he then? I don't remember. I can't do the math. I don't think he was a teenager yet. He might have been like 9 or 10.
And I didn't even say, hey, I tried to take my life. He found out kind of by accident when he visited me in the mental health hospital. And I accidentally moved my sleeves up, so we saw the scars on my wrist where I tried to split my wrist. Fortunately, I wasn't effective at sliding the wrist, but he said, well, what's that all about? I certainly couldn't hide it or disguise it then. So I said, well, this is what happened. I promise I will never do that again. That's why I'm in this hospital right now. And that taught him at a very young age not to have stigma, to speak up if you are struggling before you might possibly get to that point of wanting to hurt yourself. And he brought air to his high school. He brought air to his college. And he is a mentally healthy person. And I think a big part of it is because of the education, although telling that education came about the hard way by losing his uncle, which he learned like several years later, the real reason, and almost losing his mom. He has that education. I love that Air is so proactive to try to prevent that education happening the hard way. It's never easy to talk about, but it's certainly better proactive and preventatively rather than after a tragedy.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, the work that Air is doing, like, is amazing. There isn't even a word to describe, like, how great it is. But I know that all these programs take money, and especially in this day and age where programs are being, especially schools, the costs are, everything's being cut. Like, so a program like AIRS is really like, oh, we can't afford it. So Tricia, what do we do to help get funding? And I know you do fundraising, so maybe you could share that with our listeners too. So that hopefully somebody will be inspired to.
I hope so, Candy. Yeah, this past year has been a struggle. We had several larger donors last year that helped us get through this year. But we're hoping and praying. I'm a big believer in prayer, and that somebody will find us and help us, because it's really hard right now. The amount of government cuts that have occurred here in New Jersey, the schools' budgets have been slashed. I work with several districts. One district I know, because they've been cut so significantly, they're closing two elementary schools and a middle school. So there's no money for mental health education. They're just trying to keep their heads above water. Another district, I believe, is they're filing for bankruptcy. I just heard of another district yesterday, out of two elementary schools, they're closing one of those elementary schools. So with those school closures, you're losing counselors, you're losing teachers, you're losing those safe, trusted adults who would be there to support the kids. So my hope is that there are people who are listening and who care about our message and who would consider supporting us. We do have an event in October. It's the Taste of Hope. You can find out all about our fundraising. It's at https://air.ngo. And we're running a special fundraiser as well, because one of the districts that had their budgets slashed significantly was the Hopewell Valley School District. And they have 35 teachers with dogs all on a list ready to go through our training program, but there's absolutely no funding for it. So we're doing a special fundraiser. Our goal is hopefully if we can raise $24,000 in order to run a class. The class is 11 months long. It includes different types of safety equipment. It includes testing. They have to take their canine good citizen test. They have to take a written test, and then there's their therapy test. It's a very robust program because we are preparing teachers and their dogs to be ready for the unpredictable. I mean, that's really what we're training for, because schools can be unpredictable. So you know, if there's anybody out there who thinks that, we need to have more dogs in schools, if you can help us, if you go to the website, you should be able to make a donation. Or come October 8th, it's at the Princeton Marriott Hotel in Plainsboro. We'd love to have you come and just buy a ticket and see what we're all about. Maybe you might want to get more involved in what we're doing. Unfortunately, unfortunately, we've been doing this program for almost 16 years. And for most of that time, the youth suicide rate in New Jersey, it was the third leading cause of death. I'm really sad to say, as of 2024, that number is now, suicide is the second leading cause of death of New Jersey's young people. So it's not getting better. It's getting worse. And I just see the types of cuts that are happening. It's just detrimental to our young people. So again, if you have kids in your lives and you care about their mental well-being, if they have friends and you care about their mental well-being, and if you love dogs, that's who we are. The goal is to try to bring mental health education into as many schools as we can. But my goal, as I said earlier, was to try to get as many dogs into schools as we can. Because the response to the school-based dogs, it's amazing. We had one child, fifth grader, was crying on the last day of school because he had to say goodbye to the school dog. I have heard stories where school refusal is now a challenge with a lot of school districts. Well, kids will say, it's Tuesday, buddy will be in school. I'm going to school today, right? We also will go before they're taking finals or SAT tests, because when they interact with dogs, it lowers their cortisol level, their stress level. It allows them to think more clearly and they can actually perform better on the tests. So there's all of these benefits to having dogs. De-escalation time for students. If they're having an outburst, it can go from a half hour to an hour down to 5 minutes or less for that child to de-escalate. And all that happens is they just spend time with a dog. So we are working with TCNJ Tap Lab. Again, we do research with them just so that people can see that what we do is based in science and it is working. And again, my hope is to be able to reach as many kids as we possibly can. Well, 250,000 to me, I still think is amazing. I do believe, couldn't do without help and support of my wonderful human companions, as well as their dogs. And I do believe Kenny walks with me each and every day. I believe that. And I think Mike walks. I believe Mike and Kenny met in heaven and brought Shauna into my life. I believe that. And that's what I feel. Because I think, how could I talk to 250,000 kids, just me alone, right? I don't think I could do it alone. So I have that sort of support, that inspirational support, and I'm grateful for it. And as I said, I couldn't do it without the other humans and canines that are always, when I ask, they always step up and they're always there to support. And for you, I'm grateful to you today for interviewing us and for sharing Air and Air's message of hope.
Yeah, I definitely want more dogs in all the schools and to prevent suicide as much as possible. When you shared that it is now the second leading cause among our kids, that is just so heartbreaking. And I know social media is a big factor and bullying is a big factor, but do you feel there's something else that's contributing to this, or are these the two main things?
So Mott, I'm very old fashioned. And when I go and talk to kids, my old fashionedness comes out. Like, I ask them, who reads books? Simple question. Most of them don't read books. They read things online. And then I'll start to talk to them about that feeling of reading a good book. So the experience of turning the pages, the smell of the book, I think it's a positive thing, the smell of the book. And each time you turn the page, there's that level of anticipation, what's coming next. And I talk about the last page of the book, how I don't want to turn that page because it's such a great book, I don't want it to end. And every once in a while, I'll say to the audience, I go, who knows what I'm talking about? And I get a couple hands go up. Something that simple where I don't need this to read a book. How about going out and riding bikes? Who still rides bikes? And as I said, the little ones are still riding bikes, which makes me happy. But there's too much dependence upon this. I was in one school And it was in between my sessions. So I was in the gym hanging out, waiting. It was gym class. And gym class, they were all on their computers for gym class. I'm like, these kids need to get up. They need to be running around. They need to be burning off all this excess energy, building a healthier heart, a healthier body, and a healthier brain. So there's a lot of that that happens. And then I think they come home and they're on their laptops as well. We tell them to get off, but then what do we give them to do their homework on is laptops. I am a believer, and this is what my kids, we always had all of the electronics were in the family room. The kids could not have electronics in their bedroom, and their phones should be charging someplace else at night. I think this is one of the big reasons why kids are not sleeping. They're on their phone, and they need to sleep. I really see sleep, lack of sleep, as a key component to this and what's happening. Plus the pressures that we put on them these days. And I do believe that they get pressure from school, from teachers, they get pressures from parents, and then they put pressures on themselves. In talking to so many kids, they're struggling and they're feeling overwhelmed and stressed. They don't want to tell anyone because they don't want to disappoint their parents. So parents really are the key group that we need to educate. And unfortunately, too many parents have that not my child syndrome. My child's too smart to have a mental health disorder. What parents have to understand, it's the intelligent kids, that people who have these high IQs, highly intelligent, are more likely to struggle with mental health disorders than somebody who's less intelligent. Right. So that doesn't make sense to us. Right. Because if I have a healthy brain, I'm going to be really smart and I'm going to be successful. Right. You look about all the highly intelligent people in life, like Einstein, how incredibly intelligent. He couldn't find his socks. So he used to paint his black on his feet for his socks. Right. So he's obviously struggled with something. Right. I like to describe it as the average person, the way we experience life, our thoughts, our emotions, it's kind of, we're like the middle of the road, right? These are our highs, these are our lows. But then for the people who struggle with these brain illnesses, their highs are much higher and their lows are much lower. And if you have this healthy brain right here in the middle, it's really hard for us to understand this unhealthy brain. I think that's probably the most challenging part of what we're talking about with the brain. And even trying to get not just parents, but then teachers to understand that child is acting out. But why? Why? Is there an underlying illness that's causing the behavior, right? Mm-hmm. And when you start to think like that way, you can be a little more empathetic towards the child and the behavior, and then hopefully be able to help the child address the illness and then address the behavior. So it's very complicated. I just think our world has gotten so busy, and I think we need to slow ourselves down. I think we need to take a step back from electronics. One of the things I tell little kids, I tell them a short story about, I was in one school and these two girls, it was during lunchtime, they're talking to each other like this, right? I go, put down the phone. What can you see if you look into your friend's face, right? They're having a great day. I can see their joy. I can share in their joy. Tell me about your happiness. I want to share in that happiness. Or if they're struggling, I can see the pain in their eyes. And I can say, I care about you. I'm concerned. What can I do? Tell me about it. So those are the things that I think we're missing. I was listening to an interview the other day. A lot of schools are now adopting this lock your phone away. And what the young man reported, he was a junior in high school, he said, the difference now in the hallway, he said, it used to be like a bunch of zombies walking around. Now he says there's commotion, there's people talking, there's laughter in the hallway, right? So that's my belief. And again, I'm an old-fashioned person, but I do believe we need to get back a little bit more of those old-fashioned ways. And as I tell the kids, electronics is good. I use electronics, but the key word is moderation, right? We need to put down the phones. We need to be able to sit, have dinner with each other, talk to each other, but also be aware what these brain illnesses look like, what the signs and symptoms are. Someone once said, well, if you had dinner with your kid, your kid wouldn't have killed himself. Well, no, that's not true. I had dinner with my kid almost every night. It's understanding these illnesses. I had no understanding. I also lost my mother-in-law to suicide. I had no understanding of these illnesses until I watched Kenny live for 3.5 years with these illnesses. And I watched him in pain. And I watched as we fought and we struggled. And every door we knocked on was slammed in our faces. We could not find him help. So that's our hope, is that we've made just a little bit of change. So I think there's been some improvement, but we still have a very long way to go.
Agree. Lucy, do you have anything you want to add to the conversation?
No, I think the thing that I sell to the kids is, when asked, I said, we need to talk to each other. They're looking at the shoe exhibit and what can we do? And I said, well, the purpose of this shoe exhibit is so that you can see that the shoes come in all shapes and sizes, like you guys, right? So they have cleats, flip-flops, stiletto heels are these shoes. Imagine 400 pairs of shoes, all different shapes and sizes. And the kids immediately see themselves in there. And they go, why are these shoes here? So I'll explain that they represent the young people that we lose in New Jersey in a couple of year period. And they say, oh, and why are you here? I said, well, we're here so that you guys can talk to each other. So you see the student, the athlete next to you, that it looks like he's got it all together, but maybe not. So you guys need to talk to each other, because you can't solve a problem unless you talk about it. So we're here to talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Excellent. Shauna, what about you? Do you have anything, last words to share with us?
Well, building on what Lucy said, at every presentation, the students receive air wristbands. And it has the crisis hotline number on it. And it says air on it. And I love that Tricia reinforces, by wearing this wristband, you let your friends know that they can trust you coming to you, and together you'll go to a trusted adult to be connected with the support you need. And it just helped. There are so many resources that Tricia has created and made available to open up the conversation. And whether it's the dogs, the wristbands, the actual programs, there's so much that I really hope we can garner support to keep AIR going for many, many years. I know we had a lot of impact. The testimonials on the website are just a few examples from students, from superintendents, teachers, counselors, etc. I sound trumped up, because I am, because every time, whether I'm at an event where AIR is exhibiting or Taste of Hope or this kind of conversation, I'm both emotionally overwhelmed and exhilarated, because it brings up a lot of memories of some bad things in the past that we had talked about. But all that led to, like, me getting connected with AIR and being part of this amazing mission, this impactful mission. And I hope we can garner the support that we need to keep it going and help so many more people.
Thank you. Thank you. I know that AIR is going to continue to do amazing things. We're going to work really, really hard to get some funding, and especially raise this $24,000 to run this class, so that these dogs can go into the schools and be there on a regular basis. So all the links to connect with AIR and your events will be in the show notes. Have you ever felt like life's challenges are piling up and you don't know where to start? I've been there several times. Work challenges, a life-changing injury, a divorce, grief. Having someone to listen made all the difference. And that's why I'm excited to share something that can make a real difference in your life. Today's sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp, a sponsor of the podcast, is an online platform that connects you with licensed therapists
making it easy to get the support you need from the comfort of your own home. Whether you're dealing with stress, anxiety, relationship issues, or just feeling stuck, BetterHelp has professionals who can help. What I love about BetterHelp is that it's tailored to you. Starting therapy with BetterHelp is easy. Fill out a form, and you're matched with a therapist, in most cases, within a couple of days. If the first therapist doesn't feel like the right fit, you can easily switch to another one until you find the right someone you can connect with. It's not awkward or a hassle. It's not just about therapy. It's about having someone in your corner when you need it most. So if you've been thinking about starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? Visit BetterHelp.com/Candace Snyder today to get 10% off your first month of therapy. That's BetterHelp.com/Candace Snyder because you deserve to feel supported, heard, and empowered.
Kindness looks good on everyone, and that's why the Passion, Purpose, and Possibilities podcast has partnered with The Kindness Cause, a creatively curated online shopping experience of fashion-forward gifts that donate to nonprofit organizations to help you shop with purpose and donate in style. Together, our mission is to spread kindness, give back, and empower individuals to pursue their dreams through our exclusive line of inspirational merchandise that not only uplifts your spirits, but also gives back to those in need. Every purchase donates to a charitable nonprofit organization. To see this exclusive line, make a purchase, and support a cause, head over to the show notes for the direct link.
I can't thank you enough for being here, but before I let you go, on this podcast, I always ask what I call the 3P questions. And the reason I do that is to inspire the listeners to go do the thing that you've been putting on the back burner. Maybe somebody will say something today that will resonate to make you support a cause. Go try that sport you never try, take a trip, whatever it may be. So I'm going to ask Tricia first. What is something you're passionate about that people might not know about you?
Well, that's a tough question because I'm very open about my life. And I think everything is out there about me, which is fine. Sometimes people interview me and it's like, can I say that? I'm like, yeah, go ahead. It's already out there. I have no secrets. My life before Kenny passed, my life since Kenny, there's no secrets. And I feel that's important that we're open and we're honest.
So, Lucy, what is something you're passionate about that people might not know about you?
Well, so to begin with, you don't have to spend more than 2 minutes with the Bakers to be passionate about their mission. But I think even before I met them, I've been passionate about giving young people a voice, I guess. And I had my childhood was not easy. My teenage years were anxious. How's that? and so I, before I met Air and Tricia and the Bakers, I was a court appointed special advocate. And we work with the foster care system and children involved in foster care system. And I realized that these children didn't have a voice. They needed someone to speak up for them. And that's exactly what a CASA did. And now I realize, connecting the dots, that when I encountered AIR, it was still in there, this passion to reach out to young people and make sure that their voice is heard and that I can sort of lift them up so that they can move forward with their life. So that's, I guess, it's not so much of a secret. Like Tricia said, it's out there, but I've sort of had the realization that that's where all that came from, was my real passion to see to it that young people are heard and can move forward. So that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you shared that. And I love that what you did before connects to like what you're doing now. And it's the reason why the podcast came about, right? I never realized until much later, just a few years ago, that my passion really is about sharing people's stories and talking about the causes people care about most. But when I look back to who I was as a kid, actually, I filled out a form to become a gratitude ambassador and then realize, hey, this is who you've been your entire life. And so this is the thing that you're passionate about. So I love that you connected the dots. Shauna, what about you? What is something you're passionate about that people might not know about you?
Well, thank you for, I appreciate you asking me last because then I get to think more about what I can come up with to say. Well, I've had a passion in the past to be a teacher. That didn't work out specifically. I'm not officially a teacher, but working with AIR has inspired me to pursue other ways to educate kids. And actually, it's probably jumping ahead to your second or third question. So I'll leave you in suspense until the question comes around.
Okay. Okay, Tricia. So the second question is, what is your definition of purpose?
So my definition of purpose is, in helping others, we help ourselves. I truly believe that AIR is how I have healed, grieved, and healed through Ketty's loss. And when I go in and I do the Mickey and Friends program with, I call them the littles, I'm telling you, my heart is so happy. When you see them smile and it just, they're bouncing around and it just, I say, this is why I do what I do, so that I can find joy in life again, because it's hard. I know you guys understand that. But yeah, I find when you help other people, it kind of gets ourselves out of our own headspace and we're able to find joy again.
Right. What about you, Lucy? What is your definition of purpose?
I think your purpose is what helps you to move your passion forward, as said.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think often on, especially on this podcast, as I talk to different people and I hear their stories of transformation, the passion and the purpose end up merging, right? They're not usually two separate things. You can have more than one passion. You can definitely have more than one purpose. But I think the happiest people are the ones that have both of them combined.
Right. Yeah. If you have a purpose that doesn't match with your passion, then that's not really your purpose.
Yeah.
Right.
So true. So true. What about you, Shauna? What is your definition of purpose?
Purpose is what gets you motivated to get out of bed every day. And I am so fortunate to have my career and my volunteer work with AIR so in sync with my passion to help with the mission of mental health education, suicide prevention. And sometimes work can be frustrating, exhausting, overwhelming. It can be emotionally overwhelming because of the emotional highs to everything we've been talking about the past hour or so, but it's so meaningful. And I don't know, or I have a sense that not many people have that in their personalize. And I'm, every time we talk about this or when we have an AIR event or it really gets me to appreciate all that I have and all that I'm able to contribute to.
That's, yeah, you're so right. Yeah, that's so right. Okay, there's one more and it could be related to AIR. It could be related to trying to fundraise for AIR or educate more kids. It could be that, but it doesn't have to be AIR related. It can be anything. So is there a possibility, a dream or vision you have for the future? What about you, Tricia?
Well, my life is AIR. So this is something that I wrote at the beginning of AIR's launch. I hope one day every child can be happy and there'll be no pain or suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it starts, this comes up often on the podcast too, the ripple effect, right? So it started with you and your family and starting AIR and then reaching out to different people and getting more volunteers, and it just keeps spreading and spreading. And that's how we'll keep it going to reach more kids so that they are happy and there is no stigma around mental health and suicide. Yeah. What about you, Lucy? Is there a dream, a possibility, a vision you have?
It's kind of funny, really, my dream. So I would like to finally get my bachelor's degree. How's that?
That's awesome.
And so people who find out that I don't have one, they're like, because I do so much like stuff, right? I have a career. I do all this volunteer work. I do all these things. And they're like, and so, but it still comes up, the fact that I don't have one. Or you'll be in some room and someone will say, oh, where'd you go to college? That's what I'll get, that sort of thing. And I've been working on it little bits and pieces. But so once I guess I'm done with my career, my plan is actually to go back to college. And then it's just for me, right? And I actually share this with children when the subject of college comes up. They're like, oh, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I'm like, okay, well, I don't think you have to be sure. But if you have the opportunity to go, it's probably a good thing to do. Because, you know, here I am, 66 years old, and I'm still sort of missing the fact that I never got my my degree. So that's my secret dream. Oh. Don't tell anybody, okay?
All right.
We will. We look forward to it.
All right, Shauna, what about you? Is there a possibility, a dream, or vision you have for the future?
Yes. So as I mentioned earlier, I used to want to be a teacher. I still kind of do, but I'm not going to go back to school for that. I also had a dream years ago of writing children's fiction. Took a stab at it, didn't go very far with it, and then kind of forgot about it for a long time until recently. So I'm going to pursue that again, but tying it into everything we've been talking about. So I want to educate kids, and I want to incorporate that mental health education and that confidence building and that kind of a thing. And so I was just saying earlier today when my fiance and I were walking on the boardwalk, and I say, I've been talking off and on for a while about writing kids' books. I should just take some vacation time and focus on that. And not that I'm against walking on the boardwalk and not working, but I do. These conversations and everything with Air is rekindling that passion and that motivation. And so now that I've said it publicly, I guess I really have to do it.
Yeah, it made myself a liar.
You need to follow through. Yes, it's time for you to follow through. Okay, ladies. Well, I cannot thank you enough for being guests on the podcast. Any final words before we wrap it up?
Okay, I just want to say thank you. Thank you to Lucy, to Shauna. We couldn't do a lot of what we do without their love and their support. And again, Candy, thank you for hosting us today. We really appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
Yes, thank you. And I'm just so proud and inspired by all of you and so glad. I want to hug you guys, but we're young at the moment. For
virtual hugs.
I owe you.
Okay. Lucy, anything else? Or
no, well, thank you for hosting us. This is very informative and helpful, I think, really. So, excellent. Right.
Well, thank you again, ladies. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a rating and review and share it with a friend. Your support helps us reach more listeners and create a bigger impact. We're also doing something special. Each month, we'll be selecting a review to feature in an episode, and the reviewer will receive a surprise giveaway. So don't forget to leave your thoughts. You might just be our next winner. To connect with me or learn more, check the links in the show notes. I'd love to hear what inspired you today. Feel free to email me directly at candy564@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and until next time.